But I think the biggest thing that I have to say that I love and I honor and I respect in the end of life care is how the dead body has to be respected.
Hey everyone, Nathan Long here, president of Saybrook University. Welcome to another episode of Saybrook Insights. My guest today is Saybrook alumna and current student, Ms. Eileen Lang. She is a PhD student in the Mind-Body Medicine Program Contemplative End-of-Life Care Specialization. She's doing amazing things both in and outside of school, including work in her home country of Grenada. She's starting that transition out, but has really made a huge impact. I'd like for you to tune in and hear more. She's such a fascinating human being. So let's get to it with Ms. Eileen Lang. Ms. Eileen Lang, what a joy, pleasure, an opportunity to sit down and talk with one of our fabulous students here. Thank you so much for coming on today to Saybrook Insights. It's really great to have you here today. Before we get into the meat of the interview, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to Saybrook University and chose the program you're in?
Sure. So how did I get to Saybrook? I think it happened by fate and by chance. I was going through a little moment where I was caring for my parents and my mom's health got really bad. And I kind of prayed, well, not kind of, but I prayed. My faith is very strong. So I prayed and I asked God for guidance and to try to figure out how I can help her in a way that's not traditional. So that's how Saybrook came about. I did research and I found out that this school had a strong presence in holistic and humanistic work. So that's how I got to Saybrook.
And it led you, your family situation led you to that point. Talk a little bit about, I want to get into your faith in a minute. Talk a little bit about the non-traditional approach to health and healing that drew you in. And what was it about your mom's illness or wellness at the time that caused you to look into those things? And what sorts of things did you try to apply or try to implement with your mom?
So before Saybrook, I already believed in holistic practices. So like healing, herbs, meditation. I'm big on meditation. I'm big on prayer, like I said before, and just try to have like a positive mindset because where my parents come from, we're Afro-Caribbean. So where my parents come from, they already engage in these type of practices, you know? So we believe a lot in sound healing, like the drums. We believe a lot in herbs. We believe a lot in different spirits. And when I say spirits, I mean spirits on both sides. Spirits as in alcohol, and also to use as like tinctures and stuff like that. And then also spirits as in people that have passed down before us, you know? And also too, I would say saints and guides and spirits. It might seem a little mystical or a little foreign to some people, but I grew up in this space. So this kind of seemed very normal and natural to me. I also would say that a couple of my professors that I've had and that I've encountered here at Saybrook, they realize how wise I am. So I would definitely have to attribute it to my upbringing.
That wisdom that your family imparted to you, right? And they allowed you to cultivate that. That's very fascinating. Talk a little bit of it, if you wouldn't mind. So I'm fascinated by this as a person of non-faith and someone who clearly values those who have spiritual and faith-based practices. You talk a bit about, or you talked just a minute ago about ancestral. I don't know if you would categorize it as worship or honoring. Mm-hmm.
Honoring.
honoring more than worship. Yeah. So maybe describe what that's like, especially in an Afro-Caribbean context in that regard.
Okay. So I would have to go back to sound healing because, you know, we have the drums. We use the drums a lot, and also the drums, beating the drum also connects with the beat of our heart. So the more that we beat the drums, we can feel, I don't know, something in our spirit that pushes us to move forward. And to, it's not to say that when we beat the drum, we move in a certain way. It's spiritual. So we just have to move the way how we see fit. I hope that is making sense, because it's kind of like you can't really place it onto anything, you know? It's like our faith, it's our spirit. Like, we just have to be guided.
And the ancestral piece ties in how? You know, so your passed away family members and friends. I mean, how does that factor into your spiritual practice, if at all? Maybe it doesn't at this point, but.
Right. I mean, I will say it always does. I mean, I've always been wise. I've always prayed. I've always, you know, the land that we walk on, people are there. Spirits, not people, but spirits are there. Spirits are there walking the land. Even though they have passed on, they're still there. They're still there to guide us. They're still there to protect us. And they're still there to help us in whatever avenue in our life that we need to engage in or encounter with.
Is there a lot of prayer to your ancestors or with your ancestors? How does that manifest exactly?
So there's a lot of prayer. Like, I do use the Bible. I pray with the Bible. My dad taught me how to pray growing up, so I do that. I also work the land. Like, for example, I do a lot of farming. I go to the beach because there are spirits everywhere. There's water spirits, there's earth spirits, there's wind spirits, there's, you know, this is a very deep conversation and it might go over a lot of people's heads, but it's my faith. And I strongly, strongly, strongly believe in it. Also too, we also have different gifts. Like, for me, I have the gift of sight. So say, for example, I could be going through something, whatever it may be, and I can be praying and I can ask God for sight, for me to be able to see forward. I can ask my guides. I can ask my ancestors, those that came before me, and they will show themselves.
Okay, interesting. And the reason I wanted to go down this road a little bit is because there is... At least maybe I'm over extrapolating here, but there is a connection point to the holistic health and healing component that you were just talking about. And so the ancestral connection, the work you're doing, I love the fact that you farm and that you commune with nature in different ways, and the sound, sound healing, the work that you do there. Can you talk a little bit about how, during your mom's illness and what she was going through, how did these spiritual practices and the holistic techniques support you and her during that process? And certainly only tell us what you're comfortable telling us about in that regard,
because
I know it's a private family stuff too. So
I would say I definitely prayed a lot. You know, I didn't want to lose my mom. I mean, even though unfortunately I ended up losing her, but give me a second. Let me collect my thoughts here. But yeah, I definitely prayed a lot. You know, I did like different rituals as far as like lighting candles for the ancestors to give them light so they can come and help and guide us and make sure that she heals the way that she can heal. Yes, for sure. While she was in the hospital, she had to be on medications and stuff like that. But that's on the physical realm. So I had to take it upon myself to work in the spiritual realm, because even though we are physical beings, we are still spiritual beings. So I had to work on the spiritual end to make sure I light candles and ask for protection and do different types of prayers, whether if the prayers came from myself or if whether the prayers came from the Bible. So sometimes I would do like intuitive prayer where I would just open up the Bible and just take a couple deep breaths and point to a verse in the Bible. And I would do that and I would read the Bible and I would, you know, read the verse a couple times to make sure that I can, I would say, invoke the spirits that needed to be around to help my mom. And then after, when she came from the hospital, I still continued with prayer because prayer is strong. Prayer is very powerful. Prayer can move mountains. Prayer can, you know, help us with whatever we need assistance with in life.
And so you really felt like in your experience with your mom and in life in general, that faith approach, that prayer, that work in the spiritual realm contributed in some way to her, mm-hmm. even if it was just to manage through the pain or the issues that she was experiencing. Yeah, that's a great.
But then also too, with the like crystals, I would start collecting different crystals because they have different properties. They have different healing properties. They have different energetic properties. I would also use crystals and put them by her bedside or rest them on her or surround her with some type of energy so she can be able to feel the energy so that she can be able to begin healing.
Interesting. Okay. And then, so you found your way to Saybrook, mm-hmm. and the holistic approach to healing. And I'm just kind of curious, you've done your master's and so you're in your PhD program now, correct? And
right.
So you're exploring even more deeply the mind body approach, the integrative health and healing. What have you started to learn that has maybe expanded or challenged your current worldview in terms of where you're at in the world, your upbringing, et cetera? I'm just curious to know. I mean, what kind of informs who you are now?
Ooh, okay. So a lot has happened from my master's until now. I would say, when it comes to, so my specialization is end of life care. So encountering my mom's passing, but then also encountering death in general, like I have been around death my entire life. My parents are elders, so we have been around death forever. So I would say something that has really helped me learn is that growing up, I really wanted to become an obstetrician. And an obstetrician is a doctor that delivers babies, but God has placed me at the other end to help people when it comes to end of life care. Something that also helped me in this field is knowing and understanding end of life, understanding that it comes with grief periods, understanding that emotions are attached to it. Our entire body is attached to it, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, all of it is attached to it. But I think the biggest thing that I have to say that I love and I honor and I respect in the end of life care is how the dead body has to be respected. Just as how we are in life and we have to respect our bodies, in death it's pretty much the same thing.
Why the respect of the body itself after? I don't disagree with you. I'm asking, from your studies, you've learned that the dead body, the shell that was occupied by the mm-hmm. the individual, if you will, needs to be respected. Why? What's important about that? Yeah.
Placement of the dead body, where people want to be buried, that's important. Where the individuals that are still living, they have to make sure that they respect that. And then also too, it needs to be respected because we all are going to go through that period where we're going to pass away. Say, for example, you are transitioning and you want to be buried in California. But your family takes it upon themselves and bury you somewhere else. There are, I believe that there are a number of things that can happen. Your spirit will not rest because you are not buried where you want to be buried. And two, there's also karma that comes with that. You know, karma as in the next seven generations or the next 21 generations or the next 30 generations, where they will experience karma. You know, they can experience a lot of turmoil in their lives and they might not understand why they experience all of this turmoil in their lives. So in my opinion, I feel and believe that is the reason why the dead has to be respected.
Fair enough. And I think, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if you, in the coursework that you've taken to date, there was a recent situation, Harvard University's College of Medicine, I believe, they had a big issue or scandal where the bodies that were being used to study, you know, disease and impact of disease were being sold for parts, right? And the impact that this had on the families and their own sense of trust and, and stability and the grief that they were already experiencing, it sort of researched that. And then to put it in the context of however you look at it, literally or metaphorically, right? That impact on, you know, just debasing the individual's wishes, right? And the family's wishes and how that can impact. I think it's an interesting approach. You also said something that struck me as you've been around death forever. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I was thinking, you know, we all are around death, but not necessarily. I was thinking about my children. They've not experienced death in this, in the real sense of someone close to them passing. But yet I know in our private conversations we've had, you've seen so much in your short life so far. And there are people, so many of, you know, I've experienced quite a bit of death and the impact that that has. And I'm curious, how is, from the best that you can tell, because I think it shapes who we are, how has that ultimately shaped you as a human being in terms of your own outlook on life and where you're headed?
I feel like it has helped me a lot with my faith. I feel like it also helped me a lot with my confidence and also my strength, because being around death, it makes me not fearful. Like, I'm not fearful of anything. I'm not fearful of dying. I'm not fearful of, you know, nothing, you know. It would attribute a lot to my strength, because there are some people that are uncomfortable talking about death. But if I encounter, you know, different people and have this type of conversation, I always let them know, you know, death is a part of life. Like, we're all not going to leave here alive. Like, we all have to, you know, we all have to die. We all have to transition.
We're all terminal, right? As they say, from the moment we're born. Yeah, right.
Right. But our spirits are immortal. So our spirits will continue to live on, you know, and it goes to your belief, you know, it goes to your practice. It goes to, you know, whatever you have, you know, in your mind, because it's all different for everyone. What I might see, like, for example, the first time I experienced death was, I probably was about 4 years old. I had a sister that passed away.
Oh, wow.
Then after that, it's like I've had number of people that have passed away. But it also goes to the type of grief that comes with the passing. You know, maybe you might have someone that passed on and you're not really close to them and you don't really feel it that deep. But also too, maybe you might have someone that passed away and it strikes you, like it strikes you. It turns your entire life upside down. And, you know, you try to find a sense of meaning. You try to find a sense of purpose. And I also want to talk on this when I talk about transitioning and also talking about dreams. Like, there are different dreams that people might have when they encounter death. Like, there's a lot of times where I dream of my mom. There's a lot of times where I dream of other people that have passed on. And, you know, they give me a little bit of knowledge from the other side. They give me a little bit of guidance, you know, if I might be worried about something or having a hard time in life. And, you know, they might come and they'll be like, you know, it's okay. Everything is going to be okay. But those words can help me in such a way where I didn't even think that I would know that I had the courage and the faith to move forward.
That's so incredible. I love hearing that. I think that's, and it's sustained you clearly, and it's motivated you in different ways. I know, even in the heat of your graduate program, your master's degree, you talked a lot about how impactful just leaning in on that was so important for helping you finish. Yeah, no, that's great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you found your way into this contemplative end-of-life care specialization. It seems to be really opening up a lot of interesting philosophical pathways for you, along with practitioner-oriented stuff. What do you hope to do after you finish your doctorate in this focus area?
There's a number of things I want to do. I want to focus on, not only do I want to focus on the elderly and people in their families that have encountered this death, because grief can really tear some people apart, you know? So the number one thing that I would want to do is not only open up a hospice center, but also to create like a community for the elderly, because the elderly, the children and women are greatly neglected. So I want to be able to open up a space for them, and then also create opportunities for others so they can learn, so we can be able to bridge the gap between death and life, pretty much.
Do you see in your country where you're at, in Grenada, a similar approach to the elderly that we have here in the States? And I don't know if that computes, but because to your point, I know in the U.S., we have a hard time honoring our elderly. If you're not young and you're not like knocking out gold medals or, you know, you're a prodigy status or doing things, you're not, you tend to lose your worth or value. Is it different where you're at in the world? And it sounds like there may be some crossover effect and maybe some also differences.
I would say in America, the elderly are more taken care of than over here.
Ah, okay.
You know, we have, in America, we have, you know, avenues like Medicare, Medicaid, you know, different types of insurance that's going to be able to help individuals. Like, say, for example, if an individual needs to go into hospice, and if an individual has insurance, Medicare would take care of it. Or if they have, you know, money, they'll take care of it. But here, people don't know what hospice is. A lot of people die at home, or a lot of people die at the hospital. So that's why I want to be able to create something like that for individuals. And then not only just a place for them to transition, but a comfortable place for them to transition. You know, I want to be able to incorporate sound therapy. I want to be able to incorporate meditations. Like, I'm giving myself goosebumps talking about this. But it's like, you know, I want to be able to incorporate all of that, because it will also help the individual settle their spirit. You know, a lot of people are afraid to die. So if we're afraid to die, and all of this is really pretty much controlled by our nervous system and our brain, then if we'll be able to calm down our nervous system, calm down our hearts, then we'll be able to have that mind-body connection.
What a beautiful concept. And this is exactly when I first came to Saybrook, one of the hopes I had, especially for programs like the one you're in, is to have that, you know, continue to have that outsized impact in your community, right? And really advancing the health and well-being of the community. And we often get I won't say get stuck, but we would, I would say not just at Saybrook, but societally, we get kind of uber focused on the younger and the middle-aged.
Yeah.
And what you're describing, when you said goosebumps, you were getting goosebumps. I'm thinking, could you imagine having these places where people could transition to be in community with one another? And what's the phrase? Have a good death, have a good transition. I think we don't talk about that enough, that it often is so not talked about, to your point earlier, right? Where we're sitting here worried about dying when in actuality, it is a fact we will. So why not create the conditions for a good death? And that's what you're describing, it seems like to me. And a good end of life, and maybe, you know, in that transition,
a respectful end of life.
Yes, there you go.
A respectful end of life. You know, like I was saying earlier, like the elderly is often neglected, and it's like to see, like I still care for my dad right now, and it's like to see that we don't even have spaces for the elderly, to see that people don't even try to visit the elderly. It's I don't know if it's because I grew up with the elderly. I don't know why it's hurting me so much, but it's like, I want to be able to help and help in any way that I can, you know? Like when I started my educational journey, my academic journey, I started off with culinary because I like to see people eat and enjoy food, you know? And then after that, I branched off into health and nutrition because I want to be able to learn how the food works in our body to sustain us so we can live. And then here we are at the end of life. So it's like I was guided the whole way through.
That's right. That's right. Oh, that's so great. Mm-hmm. Well, count me in as a supporter when you get to that point where you're developing out these centers. I think that's just terrific.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I mean, I think it's so needed. And I appreciate your optimistic attitude about the U.S. And I do love our country, so it's not that I don't. However, I think about my own parents and my own grandparents and great grandparents, and probably similar to you, I my family comes from, you know, middle and working class means, and so the idea of a good death escaped a lot of my own family. You know, it was more dying alone in a nursing home or at home and away from the people they cared and loved, and often not in the best of conditions. So I think what you're talking about has impact both in your area, but also internationally, I think, especially in places like the U.S. So
for sure.
Think big. You know, you've got, I think you're onto something.
I think another thing that I want to touch on is when it comes to the educational part on end of life care, there's not much research on it. Number one, there's not much health professionals that actually know and understand and how to respect the end of life. You know, when it comes to doctors, when it comes to nurses, when it comes to, you know, healthcare practitioners, based on the research that I've done so far at Saybrook, a lot of the research has come up where, you know, education is not being advertised. Education is not being produced when it comes to end of life care, because number one, there's a great fear around it. Number two, in medical school, they don't really talk on it, just like nutrition. They just like gloss over it and then expect that, you know, people are going to know about it, but you have to be able to have knowledge based on your practice.
So true. Yeah, I think there was some recent studies that came out even with medical school training that is one of the least explored areas in the training literature. And so many docs feel not prepared or unprepared to really dig into that space and are comfortable in working with families through the end of life process. It's a great point that you raised. Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to transition. We could spend hours on this topic.
Oh yeah, you know, we can.
Yeah. When you're back in Pasadena, or maybe we come back around and do this another time, we'll have to talk more. I do want to talk for just a couple minutes, because one of the things that you and I talked about, I think it was probably about a year ago, was a lot of the political work that you were engaged in Grenada, right? I mean, in your home country, and the work you had engaged in with supporting the prime minister, new prime minister at the time. Maybe talk to our audience a little bit about what motivated you to get involved in that space. I mean, this here you are, you're doing all this amazing stuff at home, at school, and then you're finding time to do this.
Yeah.
That you are the quintessential Saybrook student, someone who is spinning all these plates and doing it really well. So maybe talk a little bit about how you found yourself going into this area as well.
Well, like I said before, I mean, my biggest goal in life is to be of service. You know, I want to be of service. I want to be able to help in whatever way that I can. So the political field is something that's very new to me. I just wanted to be able to create change. That's number one. Number two, we have a transformational agenda, you know, and then with the transformational agenda, we target the UN's SDG goals. So with me, the SDG goals that are important are SDG number 5, which is gender equality. SDG 3, which is good health and well-being, and then also SDG 8, which is decent work and economic growth. So in what I did, because I'm no longer in that space, I still help out, but I'm no longer in that space, I have decided to be the quintessential lifelong student and decided to move myself up to do something better. So when I was in that space, I was the president of the women's arm within the organization. And pretty much what I did was empower women, empower children to, you know, want more for themselves, because with the previous administration, the previous administration had individuals like spiritually bounded, I would say, to make themselves think that they can't do more than just basic things, you know? So what else did I do? I held workshops. I did different workshops, you know, in person and also virtually. We also had different organizations that came in and different people that were seasoned to come in and help us. We also had a grant that helped people to create different opportunities for themselves within the country as far as work or as far as, you know, whatever they decided to do. We helped with that. Another thing that I want to point out is after my presidency, I've decided to try to see if I can make my way into the UN so I can accomplish more goals and stuff. So that's that. And then also I am part of the Commonwealth Youth Academy. So the Commonwealth Youth Academy pretty much helps young entrepreneurs to help them with different tools to like start a business and like help them become empowered so they can do whatever they need to do in life. It don't necessarily have to be a business, you know, it could be pushing themselves out more into, I don't want to say the government, but push themselves out more into real life, into the world.
Yeah.
Because a lot of individuals just don't really have the overzealous attitude that I believe that they should have or that they could embrace within themselves. You know, a lot of it is about belief.
Yeah. So I'm hearing you say that you're we'll be gentle here with the previous administration, right? So,
please, yes.
but and this probably is true of a lot of politics and government officials anywhere, but you felt like they were overly bounded by, if I'm putting words in your mouth, just say this, overly bounded by convention. Like they weren't thinking big. They lacked the vision.
Right.
And what you're wanting to drive is let's think big, let's be boundless in our, you know, what we can envision for a better world, right?
Unbound.
Bringing it back to Saybrook, Eileen. I love it. If our podcast producer, Phil John Grande, is there, it's Unbound, Eileen Lang.
Unbound.
We're going to unleash her in an unbound way in the world. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And so from what I'm hearing now, so you've kind of taken a step back for the time being to focus purely on school at the moment and caring for your father. It sounds like, do you plan on getting back into this in the, you know, in the future once you're finished up with your PhD?
I mean, I'm still in it, but I help where I am needed. So I want to point this out. Before my presidency, there wasn't a lot of individuals, there weren't a lot of women that wanted to step forward. So I feel like with my presidency, I helped a lot of women step forward and I have inspired them to believe more in themselves, believe more in their beliefs, believe more in whatever practice that they, you know, encounter with. So I really feel like I helped a lot when it came to the next cohort of people that wanted to help the country to move forward.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we could talk for days and I love our conversations. We're going to unfortunately have to bring it to a close. So we have two big takeaway questions at the end of every episode. Just the first thing that comes to mind, they're quick takes. So don't feel like you have to, you know, give the star award for the answer, because it's what comes from the heart.
Okay.
So the first question is, what does the term humanistic mean to you?
Pretty much what I'm doing, putting myself out into the world, being fearless, you know, being able to learn about different cultures, learn about different practices so that you can be able to go out into the field and share your knowledge with others.
That's great. All right. And the last question, Eileen, this is where you can impart your wisdom to the world, or at least to the people who visit our podcast. With all that's out there regarding the challenges in the world, and your short but impactful life thus far, and it's going to be a long, impactful life, no doubt, what are three things people can do today, right now, to improve their health or improve their mental health or make the place, the world, a better place to live in?
One, the first thing is breathe. We have life. We have to breathe. Number two, love. Love is something that is very deep. And I think the last one is become fearless. That's the three. Love, fearlessness, and to breathe.
Ms. Eileen Lang, what a pleasure it was to have you today. Where can people find you on the web? Do you have a website? Do you have a LinkedIn profile? Where would you like people to locate you?
So I have LinkedIn. My name is Eileen Lang on LinkedIn. I have Instagram, Healer of Heart 77. I have Fiverr. So it's fiverr.com, Lang EPL. And am I missing something? Facebook, Eileen Lang. There we have it.
Awesome. Eileen, thank you so, so much. Really appreciate you.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Long. Anytime.
I hope you enjoyed Eileen as much as I did. Remember the three major takeaways, which I thought were fabulous. Number one, breathe. Number two, love. And number three, be fearless. If you want to see the YouTube version of this podcast, please visit our Saybrook YouTube page. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go to Apple iTunes and leave that 5-star rating and review and subscribe so you can get episodes as they come out. If you're on Spotify, leave that 5-star rating and make sure to follow us. You can, of course, subscribe to us on most major podcast platforms, including Google, Stitcher, Pandora, and many others. Remember to check our show notes for information on today's guests, including links to websites, books, and the like. And for more information about our university and the MindBody Medicine program, go to www.saybrook.edu. Click on Areas of Study at the top of the page and locate that program, MindBody Medicine, and or Contemplative End-of-Life Care to learn more. Or simply Google Saybrook University MindBody Medicine or Contemplative End-of-Life Care. That's it for today, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care and be well.